This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Constant and equal access to everything on the Internet is something that many of us take for granted. And we can whip out our smartphone and just as easily stream the latest episode of our favorite Netflix show as a clip of our niece's dance recital. So we live in an age of net neutrality, which means Internet service providers cannot block, slow down, or interfere with web traffic. But according to a recent announcement from the Federal Communications Commission, that may soon change. The new FCC chairman wants to get rid of Obama-era rules that enforced net neutrality, and his proposal will be up for a vote next month. Ken Rogerson is an expert in Internet politics and policy. He teaches at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy, and he joins me now. Ken, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks, Frank. Nice to be here.
Give me a little more detailed look at what net neutrality actually is and what it means for us on a day-to-day basis.
I think you explained it fairly well, which is it's just a basic principle that what goes through the channels of the Internet is the same all around, and that you don't make any distinction between different types of content, and that those particular companies that provide you that service can't make that distinction either. As you said, we have access to cat and puppy dog pictures as well as premium content like movies and other kinds of streaming.
But I have a feeling that your Internet service provider can choose companies that are or services that are available on that or not at all. We can't even choose that. And maybe I'm conflating that with my cable service, but that's not quite the same.
I would step back a little bit and say the history of the Internet has been interesting, if for no other reason that no one is quite sure which media rules to apply. The FCC doesn't really govern what's in newspapers, but it does a lot of radio and television. And then cable television came around, and then the Internet, and everyone said, well, is the Internet like a newspaper? Because initially it was mostly text and not pictures, or is it more like television, or is it more like then cable because of the kinds of things that you're saying? It's been a very difficult road that isn't completely closed, isn't completely ended yet because of those kinds of things. The Internet is kind of its own thing, and we're trying to figure out how to regulate what we should regulate, but kind of leave open because that was its basic principle, and access to information.
Therein lies some of the debate, because when it came to broadcast, the debate was settled back in the 1930s. This is like a public utility, therefore should be regulated. Nobody should own the airwaves. And so you have a right to use them, but there are very, very strict rules about how you use them because we consider it a public utility, unlike a newspaper, which is a private business.
Exactly. And then the other comment there would be a public utility means that there's a space for the public sphere. I don't know how many people have cable anymore or satellite, but at least in cable television, there are still those two or three channels that have public school information and local city council information. That is required by law on cable television. There's no regulation right now that requires a public sphere or public space on the Internet.
All right. So what would this mean now? We see the new chairman of the FCC who has said that they're going to take a vote soon, and we can surmise by the makeup of the FCC of that particular board, it's going to happen. What will that mean? What are the possibilities once we lose so-called net neutrality?
There are lots of possibilities, and I think one of the more interesting cases for us is Netflix. Netflix has been a really strong proponent in the past of net neutrality because it was a small company. As it has grown, it has hesitated to argue for net neutrality because the change in allowing it to charge more for different kinds of content is now in its own interest. And so that's what will change. Now, what the implications of that may be different for different companies, and I kind of think that Netflix is our proverbial canary in the coal mine, right? We want to see what they're going to do because they could charge more, but they could also kind of stay with the traditional principle of access, general access for everyone given their price model.
Well, here's the thing, and here's where we're going to get into competition in a minute. If Netflix had an advantage, because we're not talking so much about what the this doesn't affect directly the content providers, does it?
Correct.
It's really
no.
The service provider. So your AT&T and Time Warner Cable, however you're getting your internet, they're the ones who are going to say, if you pay me a little bit more, I'll let you go in the fast lane. And if you don't pay me, you're down in the slow lane.
Yes, there's certainly that as well. And for example, you could also take that at the level that Netflix could be the thing they charge you more for.
Right.
right?
So, yeah.
Yes. So it's really about those content providers. But one of the things that's happening in the media world is content and providers are merging. And this is one of the issues right now before the Justice Department with AT&T and Turner Broadcasting as well. Like if you merge that, suddenly you merge a whole bunch of content with a whole bunch of the providers. And then it's kind of unclear how that will play out with the net neutrality debate as well.
Particularly if I privilege my product over somebody else's.
That is something that could happen, yes.
So let's talk about what this does to competition, because right now you're talking about Netflix could charge more, but if they charged more, then the Frank Stasio movie company comes in and says, I'll get access to all those same movies and charge you less, and I'll put Netflix out of business. Right now, should Frank get access to all those films, he could really be a big competitor to Netflix.
Yeah, sure you could. But this is also one of the arguments that is being made, is that it privileges larger companies over smaller or startup companies. It's easier for these larger media-providing companies to tier their services than it is for smaller companies that may have smaller numbers to work with. If you tier your services as a large company, you might see drop-off or increase in one area, and it's not going to affect you as much. But for smaller companies, it may be more difficult to take advantage of a non-net neutrality world. And so at least one of the arguments is this favors larger companies because they have more flexibility in their business model.
Meaning less competition, right?
Yes.
Right. So that's part of it. And then in terms of end users, now we've talked about content providers, we've talked about internet service providers. Now what about me as an end user? What is that going to mean for me if all this happens?
So this is another question that is unclear how it will play out. But the possibilities, and I would say those who are detractors of this, those who are pro-net neutrality, they make this argument very strongly, which is what this does is it takes away the opportunity for everyone to have equal access to content on the internet. Now, equal access does not mean free. You would still pay for it, but the equal access is the different kinds of content can then be charged for at different levels. So people with fewer resources then don't have the opportunity or the ability to access some of the things that people with greater resources have. Again, a larger debate that's in the country right now that seems to be playing out here on the net neutrality side.
All right. So what's the argument in favor of ending net neutrality?
Oh, absolutely. That for those who feel like that there is a great opportunity in competition, that if you push that out there and you say, here, if we can let you decide what you want to do with your own business model. And that's really the biggest push for this is from the company side, from the business side, is we feel overregulated and we feel like we could make more money. And then the argument is that money can then be turned around and used to provide better resources, to hire more people, that kind of thing. So most companies who make the argument for this are saying, you are limiting what we can do with our product or service.
Well, ISPs, but again, the competition would, I guess under this model, would have to diminish if I favor the big companies over the little ones. I don't have to compete as much anymore. So there's less competition among providers, more competition perhaps among internet service providers, although they're already trying to be as fast as they can, right?
Yeah, and then again, an economic argument about whether mergers are good or not good. It's another little sidebar that we could go down on another day. But how much competition is there is open for discussion among economists and also among tech policy people.
All right, and it's in terms of what you do with your profits. Obviously, the demand for the product dictates whether you hire more. So otherwise, the profit goes to shareholders. So let's not joke about that. All right. So hang on a second.
No.
Let's talk about the regular, because it doesn't go to making more product if nobody's going to buy the product.
Exactly.
So let's talk about this regulatory process. Now it's interesting because there's this big public policy question: is it a public utility and should it be regulated or not? But it's decided by a board of five people. How did that happen? And is that the final say on net neutrality?
So one thing about the internet has always been which agency is the best regulatory place for the internet. Now, the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission, there's some logic that it should be there. But interestingly enough, some years ago, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, became the arbiter of spam. And it made sense. They called it UCE, unsolicited commercial email. So if you had a problem with spam, you went to the FTC and not the FCC. So this is a problem to figure out, where is the best place to do this? What is the internet? Is it simply a source of media? Well, no. There's entertainment. There's business. There could be fraud. You know, fraud. There's advertising, as we're seeing in the discussions of how Facebook might or might not have been used during the campaign. So the internet seems to be more of an aggregation of a lot of kinds of communication that has been touched in that touches different parts of things. There's the National Technology and Information Administration in the Department of Commerce that seems to be the regulatory place for education-related technology issues. It's unclear, Frank.
Well, what about, let me ask one more question very quickly. Legislation, yeah. Is there a chance that whatever the FCC does, the Congress could weigh in, should it desire to do so, and pass a bill, pass a law?
They could. There are certainly regular proposals in each Congress to make net neutrality the law of the land. But then there are also proposals on the other side to make net neutrality not the law of the land. And so right now, back in March, the Senate had a vote to get rid of the Obama-era regulations, and they can do that, but it wasn't necessarily a law in the traditional sense. They just said, it's okay to get rid of these regulations that were made by the FCC before. So they could. I would expect not.
Ken Rogerson is a professor at the Stanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. Ken, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Frank.
Just ahead, scientists now have the ability to edit genes. Great power, great responsibility. Do we have the public policy to govern that? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.